we are back with an amazing episode of the Multimedia Men Podcast. This is episode 65. We've been away for a whole month. So much has gone on in this whole month. My name is Brian Kluger with BoomstickComics.com. You can find this podcast on BoomstickComics.com or on iTunes under the Multimedia Men label. Please subscribe to us. Tell us how amazing we look or sound. We might just send you a voice greeting. I'm joined by the incredible, the movie maniac. He's known as Wade Davis up in Wichita. What's going on, man?
I'm the movie maniac, huh?
You are the movie maniac.
I like it. I'm going to accept that title.
I like it.
You know, I think that's great. No, things are going really good with me, man. Everything's been really great. You know, it's been a few weeks since we've actually had a chance to kind of talk about stuff. So it's a good time to kind of catch up, right?
It is. How's Wichita treating you? Is it cold up in Wichita, or is it like kind of a warm winter right now, or what's going on?
Well, up until recently, it's been unseasonably warm. We've had a really kind of mild coasting into winter, but we just started over the past week really getting some cool weather coming in. So, you know, not a lot of snow or ice or anything yet, but we're definitely starting to feel the chillier temperatures. I actually came, one of the reasons that we were gone 1 week was because I was actually up in Montreal, and it was actually this last week, I think it was colder here in Dallas than it was in Montreal, which I found to be quite unusual.
Did you see any good Canadian films up there?
I didn't. I didn't get the chance to. But I did have plenty of poutine. I'll tell you what, you know.
A lot of French fries and gravy?
I call it poutine because it's classier to say it that way. But, yeah, it's cheese fries with brown gravy all over it. Yeah, so.
That sounds amazing. And then we miss each other over Thanksgiving. Did you eat like a whole turkey and a whole bottle of whiskey, or did you cut it back this year?
It was the whole bottle of whiskey for sure. And then I ate the whole turkey after that, right? And then it was straight to the pie.
Then straight to the pie. What kind of pie was it?
We had a few different pies. It's always one of those things where the moms in the family, my wife's mom and my mom, tend to kind of really bring it home, and it's a good chance to. So we had a chocolate cream pie. We had the traditional pecan pie. We had the pumpkin, or, you know, so it was all around the place. I tried them all.
And since we are only a few days away from Christmas, are you in the Christmas holiday movie watching spirit?
I have been. Yeah, we've been actually kind of my wife is a Christmas movie fanatic. And so the thing is, we always try, and we have a whole special collection of, we'll pull out a special basket of Blu-rays and DVDs. I just finished watching The Night Before yesterday.
Which is always good.
It's a great one. It's one of those where I think it's an easy one to kind of put into the rotation and start watching it every year, just because there's some really, really funny parts in the movie that I kind of forgot about. So
that's good. Is Eyes Wide Shut in that list? Because I think that's the best Christmas movie ever made.
You know, why don't you elaborate for me on that? We've had this discussion before, and you have this whole theory going on about Eyes Wide Shut. It's a Christmas movie?
It is a Christmas movie.
Help me understand what you're thinking there.
So Eyes Wide Shut is a Christmas movie. It takes place.
No, you can't just look. You can't just keep saying the same words over and over and then use that as some sort of reinforcement for your argument here. You gotta give me some examples here how this is a Christmas movie.
Okay, so the whole movie takes place at Christmas time. Pretty much in every scene, there is a Christmas tree. There's Christmas lights. And what is the message of Christmas? You know, one movie called Love Actually would say it's telling the truth, which happens in, or takes Tom Cruise an entire movie to tell the truth. It's all about telling the truth and not only giving back, but getting something in return, which is love and something special. This happens in Eyes Wide Shut. And then, in a way, Tom Cruise is visited, I think, by like the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future in the form of like, you know, like an STD or the prostitute or the crazy like house, and like he's navigating all these bad waters, but he never does anything with it. In everything that he could have done, like have sex with a prostitute or do something at that crazy house, you find out, oh, somebody died, somebody has AIDS, and he does not do that. And it's like, it's the spirit of Christmas. It's like him finding himself and going back to the original source of like love and marriage.
What in the hell are you talking about? I mean, there's so much to unpack right there that
we don't have time.
But I just want to bring up but you talked about that. First of all, the theme of Christmas is to tell the truth. I don't know what kind of family you have, sir, but there's a lot of lies going on at Christmas time. That's when you tell everybody, oh, they look great, no, dinner was fantastic, and
That happens in Eyes Wide Shut. It's all on the front, like Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise. It's all a facade until they're in bed and she gets high and she tells him the truth, and it like rocks his world.
Well, yeah, but that's not a Christmas narrative, and nor is it like you're the one that was equating an STD with the ghost of Christmas past. I mean, is this some sort of like? I mean, I guess it's almost equivalent to Mr. Magoo's A Christmas Carol. Oh, it's really that close, isn't it? With your razzleberry dressing.
I'm telling you, it's all about the spirit of Christmas, that movie.
You are a nut, sir. You are a nut.
Watch it again. You'll be like, Brian was right again. Again.
I'm going to watch it. You know what? Everybody watch it. And on this episode, I'd like to see the comments section kind of put some... Folks, go watch Eyes Wide Shut, and you weigh in on this debate of whether or not Eyes Wide Shut is a Christmas movie. I think that this is a fascinating... I'll go watch it again.
Good, good. You'll watch it and be like, oh my God, he is really visited by three ghosts, and he comes back. And it ends at the toy store, and like they're supposed to go back to like the true meaning of like, you know, like their passion of the relationship. Because what is the last line in the movie? It's like, we need to do one thing. We need to go back to what we are. Like, we need to fuck. That is how the movie ends. Christmas. Yes. I'm right.
I'm speechless. It happens so rarely, but I don't even know what to say here. I'm going to go watch it, and then you kept on with your argument, and I think it's helping my position more than yours, sir. But.
I don't know. We'll move on. We've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk a little about the Westworld season finale. We're going to talk about Dirk Gently. We are going to talk about soundtracks, some good songs made for movies, and soundtracks that you should listen to this coming New Year's and holiday. And we are going to talk to you, our returning segment, about our movies. They're so bad, they're good movies. We're going to talk about Troll 2. And if you've never seen it or heard of it, well, you're in for a treat today. And then we talked about on our last podcast, casting a new TV show with characters from the 80s and 90s. And We're gonna have fun with this, but let's first talk about HBO's Westworld, because it's ended. The first season has ended, and it blew my ever loving mind.
Wow, it blew your mind.
It did.
Wow, I can't wait to hear about it. And so, you know, we're gonna again try and keep it as spoiler free as possible for the folks, right? But if so,
I mean, it's already aired. It's already been.
All right. Well, I mean, generally things have already aired before. Otherwise, how can we talk about them? But, oh, fair enough. Okay, so should we just tell people, hey, if you want to still catch up on that, you want to kind of fast forward a few minutes or something like that?
Yeah, fast forward 5 minutes or so, and you'll be fine.
All right, we're going to put ourselves on the clock. 5 minutes.
So 1908. All right, cool. Or 11, I don't know. But 5 minutes.
It worked out just fine.
Yeah.
Just go forward 5 minutes from now for your turkeys. Now that they're gone, let's talk about them again, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're gonna just talk about all of our.
Could you believe those losers haven't seen Westworld finale yet?
My goodness. Hey, buddy.
So let's talk about Westworld,
dude.
What a It got very nihilistic, man. It was just like everything's going to shit, isn't it?
I don't know. Is everybody a host? Like, I don't know what to believe anymore. I don't know.
There's not a living human anymore. We're in a robot world filled with robots everywhere.
Robots.
Yeah, all the robots are going around shooting each other. It's madness.
It's crazy to think that. So I know you and I talked a little bit maybe about like fan theories. Did you see any of that come to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, kind of what we discussed in one of the earlier episodes here actually kind of pretty much hit the nail on the head with a Jimmy. The William character was the Man in Black in an alternate timeline, right?
Yeah. It was.
I mean, that was. Who saw that coming? I guess we did, right? We're your modern day Nostradamus people. Quit, you know, go buy a lotto ticket when we tell you, because we're batting 1,000 right now.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, those last two episodes were just so well done on a filmmaking level and acting level, and it left me wanting like immediately another episode, and I do not want to wait another year for one.
I'm telling you, I think it got you a little bit more than me. I was just, I think the second to last episode, I enjoyed more than the last one, where in the last one, it was just like, you know, it's kind of one of my frustrations in general with things when they know that there's going to be a next chapter to it, is that like there's no real ending. It just kind of, because like, I mean, I feel like a season needs to kind of have an arc where, you know, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end, where here we just kind of have a stop in time until the story continues on the next discussion, right?
Right.
I mean, because, you know, you have the new narrative and all that stuff. I mean, I'm excited to go back and look at watch all the episodes again and kind of see if I can pick up things that I missed the first time around. But, you know, it was one of those things where I feel like it's going to be a little bit frustrating. We're just waiting for a year right now to where we can come back to it. They said 2018, right?
Yeah, so it's a longer thing, because we're in the mid-December. So to be, say, 2018, we might get it in January 2018, but who knows?
Well, it's over 12 months away at least, you know? Yeah. I mean, you want to chalk it up.
Do you think Anthony Hopkins is going to come back?
Probably not. I mean, again, we're still in the spoiler free, or we're still in the zone where we can give spoilers. So I mean, how he got killed at the very end. How do you?
Yeah, but who knows if he's a host too? Like, who knows if there's another one of him out there?
Oh Jesus Christ! If everybody's a host, just so they can bring him back, then it really is just punch out. In, I mean, you know what is going on?
Yeah, but then we saw like the samurai stuff, so that goes back into like the original movie of
right.
Are we going to see like a medieval world or like the samurai world back in the day? You know, what are we going to see? But that was really cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that was kind of a fun little nod to the movie and that, and they may delve more into it, I guess. But to me, that was kind of a, you know, oh, what's going on there? There's samurai world. And then it was like, oh, it's too complicated. We'll deal with it later. But here, let me ask you this while we're talking about it. I loved where the Maeve, that Tandy Newton storyline kind of went, but my one question is, what in the hell was that one guy working there doing, helping her so much? I mean, it seemed half the time I'm watching this guy, I'm like, you're an idiot, sir. What are you doing?
Yeah, I am not sure. I have no idea. Who know? Like I said, as of right now, I think everybody is a host. Like, I can't see anybody being human in this right now, unless they like chop off their arm and we just see bone.
The one thing I'm learning from the whole show is that people are terrible. So to me, the worst actors, or not actors as in acting, the worst care, the worst of humanity is the actual humans, and the robots are the good people. Like, I don't know. I found it to be a very interesting thing. I did like how, you know, the game's not for you and yada yada, all that stuff.
Yeah. But
I think we're getting to the end of our spoiler free zone people.
Yeah, it is. It, back, is so. It is over. Yeah, that's our Westworld talk. So welcome back, those who skipped ahead, who didn't want to hear our spoilers.
Yeah, we didn't talk about you for sure while you were gone.
Spoiler alert! Everybody wakes up next to a dead dog on an island. Oh God!
But so you know, some of my frustration with that about like not having a definite kind of arc to the first season and that I think I'm not trying to say anything negative about it, right. But if you want to talk about really clever writing and stuff like that, have you seen Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency?
I have seen 3 or 4 episodes of that show, and my God, Max Landis, the son of John Landis, yes, that John Landis, Max Landis does this show, and it is so good.
It is one of those. I just finished the first season, so there's 10 episodes, hour long each, in the first season. And this is one of the few shows where they're ahead of me. Writing and it was well thought out, you know, and you could tell that it was important they had a structure to it, because parts that happened at the very beginning are also impacted by the very end and vice versa and stuff like that. So it's really one of those where there's a lot of different things going on. It's on BBC America, and you can either go online or go on get the app, and you can still binge the whole first season and watch it. So I highly recommend this show. It's awesome.
It's on you can watch. Is it on Netflix or Hulu or something?
I don't think it is yet. It's going to be one of those ones where it's going to have to be at some point.
You know, it is. It's on Netflix or Hulu, because that's how I watched it.
Okay.
I didn't watch it on BBC. Yeah. I believe it's on Netflix. You can watch it. It's so good. It is.
It's got
Elijah Wood.
Or Frodo. Yeah,
Elijah Woods.
That's, I guess, if you want to use the actors' names.
Yeah.
You want to correct
Frodo
about
Baggins.
It. But no, but I would kind of call it like a cross between. I think we talked about it before. Somebody described it as Doctor Who meets Sherlock.
Sherlock, and like maybe a little bit of like an Edgar Wright movie in a way?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, it definitely has kind of a little nuanced things kind of digging in, like spaced and those kind of things a little bit, where you're kind of – it's multi-layered, you know?
Yes.
And so it's pretty darn awesome.
Yeah.
And as you said, it was written by Max Landis, who also did – Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right? I mean, didn't he write that as well?
Is that what Max Landis did? I'm trying to remember. Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah.
Max Landis, like I said, he is the son of John Landis, who did, you know, Coming to America, Thriller. He's a director and writer. He wrote, let's see, American Ultra, which was with Jesse Eisenberg recently. Dirk Gently, a lot of them were other shorts, but I don't think he did those other.
Crazy? Okay, he didn't do Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
No, he didn't.
All right, well, whatever.
No.
Okay.
Well,
I'm a crazy person then.
But yeah, look him up. And also, I just want to give a shout out to Max Landis. You can find it on YouTube. He did a 30, 45 minute documentary short about pro wrestling, because he is a big pro wrestling fan. And it's called Wrestling Isn't Wrestling, and it is damn good. Go see Dirk Gently. Seriously, seek it out. It is excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, really clever writing, really well put together and well thought out. So it's a high recommendation from me.
Good. So we'll move on to our next topic. We are going to talk about soundtracks, songs. When we watch movies, we like the soundtracks. We like the score of everything. It really brings out the life in a movie, I think. But there are some movies that actually have killer soundtracks as far as like actual songs by bands with lyrics. Some were made for the movie. Some are just like older songs that we forgot about that are inserted into a movie. And Quentin Tarantino, one of our favorites here, is notorious for taking these older songs and making them super badass again. I mean,
yeah, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, soundtracks as like compilation albums, Quentin Tarantino and his team that kind of works on that is just spot on. I mean, they have a really cool way of reinventing a song into a new, into, you know, reinterpreting it. You know, I mean, here's an example of that in Kill Bill, at the end of Kill Bill Volume 1, they have like a Spanish flamenco type version of Hotel California and put that as the track for a sword fight. You know, I mean, who the hell would think that normally, but it works so perfectly, right?
Yeah, no, that is it's so good that and they took the Animals, who are famous for House of the Rising Sun, but they also had that Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood back, you know, they inserted that there too, and it was just it's so good. So good. So wait, yeah. I got to ask you, give me like 2 to 5, 3, 4, 5 songs that really like stuck with you over these years that you love hearing in from a movie, like a song, like a soundtrack.
Okay. So like, I mean, I kind of, you know, if we're just talking soundtracks in general, you know, it's like a compilation thing, sort of thing. You know, one of the ones that I thought was really interesting, and I'm going to kind of lump it into a whole, I really appreciate when they take a bunch of different songs and then kind of transform them for the genre of a movie or a film or a TV show. Like we talked about it previously with like taking all these modern songs and putting it on Westworld on the player piano that they did in that whole theme. Right.
Yeah.
And one of the ones I thought about was like the Great Gatsby, the Baz Luhrmann Great Gatsby.
Oh,
they actually kind of redid a bunch of songs, in kind of a 30s style kind of swing jazzy kind of blues house thing, and I actually thought that was a really interesting album and a really interesting approach.
No, so I mean, we all know, if you, I mean, you should have read Great Gatsby if you're listening to this, but you know, in that book and the author of that book, you know, there, it was like that Renaissance period, like, you know, the upcoming jazz age. And I think with this, with the new one with Baz Luhrmann and Leonardo DiCaprio, you had Jay-Z, you had Beyonce, you had all this new music. And I think that fit perfectly with that. And I mean, it was such a good soundtrack that Third Man Records, Jack White, released that album.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was awesome.
It was really good. What other ones?
Well, I mean, you know, again, one of the ones I've been kind of thinking about, like, styles and stuff like that. Again, one of the ones I think is really underrated is like the soundtrack for Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
You know what? When those Oscars came out that year, I was super enraged and pissed that that did not get a nomination for their soundtrack.
Oh yeah. No, it was awesome. I mean, it was kind of punk rock and kind of had the whole thing and it fit with the movie well. I mean, it was just, And it kind of captured some of the spirit of the comic and that whole thing. I thought it was really kind of there were some really kick-ass songs going on there too.
Well, it was Nigel Godrich and Beck.
Is that right?
Yeah, that is
right. I did not know that.
Yes.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, so you liked it too, Sex Bob-omb rocking it out and all that?
Oh my God. Like, dude, I make mixtapes still in my car and there's usually a Sex Bob-omb song on one of those mix, like whether it be like Garbage Truck or We Are Sex Bob-omb, We Are Here to Make You Think About Death and Get Sad and Stuff. You know, it's so good.
Well, but wait, look, you make mixtapes?
I do.
What? This is crazy town. We're going to get you an iPod, buddy. We're going to get you right into the 90s. You know, we're going to get you straight to the year 2000. iPod. You're going to love it. You can put like 50 songs on that thing. It's going to blow your mind.
Oh, I've just been listening to like 17 or 18 songs here and there.
You got to flip the tape halfway through for yourself.
So just to good. Make sure. My car still has a tape cassette player.
Yeah, man. I would imagine so. That's how you're making those mixtapes. Speaking of mixtapes, how about Awesome Mix Volume 1 from Guardians of the Galaxy, huh?
I mean, we love James Gunn so much. Like James Gunn, we you and I have known James Gunn since the specials.
Yes.
And we've been a fan of his ever since. And just to see that man come from that and do Slither and some cool movies to make one of the coolest superhero movies ever, and then have a soundtrack that is, you know, on par with a Tarantino movie is just, holy God, so good.
Well, it was one of those, the soundtrack for that movie was so good that it kind of annoyed me about the movie a little bit. When I've actually rewatched it a few times and now like the movie a lot more than I did, because I was like, this soundtrack is so damn good that I was thinking that they were actually kind of doing a bait and switch on me where they were using my love of those songs to make me like the movie more. You know, it was like I thought they were playing some mind games on me, but I actually really enjoy the movie now. But the soundtrack is just, it's so, I mean, any album where you're going to have some Bowie Moon Age Daydream and you're going to have like the Runaways, like Cherry Bomb on the same thing, you're going in the right direction, man.
Yeah.
So good.
It is. It really is. I love those. I mean, I have all the ones that we've mentioned, I think I have on vinyl, and I listen to them.
You have them at home on vinyl and then on a cassette tape for your car, right?
That's true. I do. So I can listen to them.
You need to be an ultimate hip dude and get like a turntable for your car.
I should. That's next on the list.
You get it for your Cadillac, you know, just open up there.
Yes.
The glove box and have a vinyl player in there. We talked about Quentin Tarantino earlier. I mean, to me, you know, again, he's the best. He and his team are the best at the soundtracks. And it all started at Reservoir Dogs with the super sweet sounds of the 70s or whatever it was.
Yep.
And that soundtrack, I think, is still awesome.
It puts the lime in the coconut.
It's one of those where, I mean, you know, one of the most famous scene. I mean, it's really an iconic scene in movie history now, that specific scene with Michael Madsen kind of dancing around to Stuck in the Middle with You,
yes.
You know, and it couldn't be, you know, it's one of those things where that movie changed that song for me. And I can no longer not think of that movie when that song comes on. I mean, that's how powerful.
Yeah, no, exactly that. Or in Pulp Fiction, when Uma Thurman, John Travolta dance to Chuck Berry's You Never Can Tell. I mean, you think of that song when that comes up. Or Son of a Preacher Man, or Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon. You know,
yes.
Just so good.
I mean, he's so awesome at combining the audio and the visual together to just really make it into a thing. And one of the things, you know, while we're on Tarantino, one of the things I thought was amazingly ballsy was in Inglourious Basterds, they took the title track of a different movie, Cat People, and put that in the movie.
Yes.
So it's like he took the title track of a different movie soundtrack and made that a featured thing in the Inglourious Basterds. Like, it was in one of the iconic scenes of that movie. That was crazy.
Because Inglourious Basterds took place, well, you know, like Django, and even, I don't think it happened in, no, it did happen in Hateful Eight. Because with Inglourious Basterds taking place in the Holocaust, in World War II, you did get the David Bowie song, and you got Billy Preston's Slaughter as well, which were definitely not out at the time. But those songs work so well with, you know, with that scene in the film, it just worked, just like Django Unchained with the James Brown Tupac version of Payback, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in Hateful Eight, you had White Stripes' Apple Blossom.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's he's just so good at it, right? And when I was thinking about this whole soundtrack thing, there was one more thing that jumped out at me right away. Which might be, I think, it's arguable, if you're talking about soundtracks as a compilation album, this may be one of the best ones, is from the movie Chef.
Oh, yeah, Chef was a good soundtrack.
I mean, it was so good, I tweeted at Jon Favreau just to tell him how good it was. It was like, because that's something that I don't normally, I try not to get too fanboy and oh my God, that's so awesome. But it was one of those where it really just, the energy was right. The tone was right. It fit the movie well.
You have Gary Clark Jr. You have Rebirth Brash Band, a lot of like New Orleans type feel, jazzy.
Latino. And you have Cuban.
Yeah, Cuban
and
music.
And Latin fusion. And it's just, it's so rad.
Yes.
It's upbeat. I mean, I still occasionally when I'm, you know, cooking in the house, I'll crank that on and let it go.
It inspires you to make some Cuban sandwiches.
Yeah, it inspires me to make some Cuban sandwiches. That's right.
Oh, good, 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 good. Well, I
have. What do you think? Is there anything I missed that has to be on this topic of discussion?
Yes. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure soundtrack. So many good ones on that. Two Heads Are Better Than One by Power Tool. Come on.
Come on. I thought for sure you were going to bring up Orgasmo.
Orgasmo. Now you're
wait, let's talk about Bill and Ted for a second. So what all's on there? Because this one's not jumping out at me right away.
So the two heads are better than one. Heads. You have I Can't Break Away by Big Pig, which was the opening song of that movie. You have In Time, which was the slow rock ballad. You have The Boys and Girls Are Doing It. It's like those early 90s rock. And then you had the Play With Me by Extreme, which was the song when they're all at the mall. And it's like Beethoven's playing it really fast. You know, it just that whole soundtrack, you know, me growing up in the 90s, like I love that rock. And it's still so iconic whenever I hear stuff like that. I'm like, oh my God, Bill and Ted, one of like the smartest movies about time travel.
What? Come on. God damn it. Why do you say crazy stuff like that? Because my name is on this thing. I'm not going to go down as one of the... We just talked about amazing... Oh, God. Bill, one of the smartest movies about time travel ever made is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is what are the words that you're saying out loud.
It's the most smartest.
Get out of here with that.
All right. And then I have to add, we already talked about Quentin Tarantino, but Jackie Brown is one of my favorite Tarantino albums. And that Bobby Womack in Peace song, which is like the first song of the movie, mm-hmm. Across 110th Street, is like one of my favorite songs of all time. And it's got the Delphonics in there, Johnny Cash, it is Bill Withers. It is such a good soundtrack. I love it. I love that R&B soul from the 70s, 60s.
Oh, it's awesome. The soundtrack's better than the movie. I think
Jackie Brown's just as good as, well, I'm not going to say that. Brown is almost as good as Pulp Fiction. Almost. It's in
Get
my top
out
three.
Get out of here with Jackie that. I mean, this is being recorded.
It is. I love People, Jackie Brown.
What
it's
are you
so
talking
good.
About? That is craziness. Don't just start spouting crazy all the time. It's like Bill and Ted's the best time travel movie ever made, and Jackie Brown is as good as Pulp Friction, is what you're saying. Erase this whole thing. We're done.
We're starting over.
We're spiraling out of control here. You're off the rails, sir.
People, if Jackie Brown didn't come out right after Pulp Fiction, it would be regarded as a much better movie than it is. But I see Jackie Brown for what it is. It is a damn good, pretty much almost Pulp Fiction style.
No, it's not. I think he tried too hard to keep with the book, right? Because isn't that part of the deal where it was like this is like a book adaptation from a book or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, what's his name's Elmore?
Yeah, Elmore Leonard. Yes. Yeah. And if he would have stuck, I think that he could have, if he had it to do today, he would put more Tarantino stamp on it, and it would be something amazing, you know. I think that there's opportunities to improve on it. You know, I do think it gets a bad rap. I think Jackie Brown is better than everybody gives it credit for. I mean, it's good.
It's good.
But it's not, you know, I mean, it's probably my least favorite Tarantino movie, though.
Not mine. But we're not talking Tarantino right now. And I have to say one of my favorite songs from a movie that was strictly made for the movie, and it is very hard to find. Like, if you want the song, you can't go download it. Like, it is not on iTunes. It is not like any in like PayPlay.fm. It is not on any of that. You have to buy the vinyl, which you won't be able to find unless you pay $50 to $100 for, even if you can find that. And the CD is probably even more for that. But I'm talking about a movie called Critters from the 80s, and there is an excellent song in there sung by Terrence Mann, who sings a song called Power of the Night, and it is pure 80s rock and roll. It is my favorite. Well, Richie Sambello did Rock Until You Drop for Monster Squad, and that is pretty badass, too. But those two right there are my top two favorites.
Well, this one I'm going to have to go look up, too, because it's not ringing a bell with me.
So Power Very of the exciting. Night is like, Power of the Night, streets are calling. Oh, it's so good. And then, of course, you know, Monster Squad, Rock Until You Drop. Dance until your heart stops.
I thought you were going to throw out something like, and I still believe, and then have the oiled up sax man kind of shaking his ass.
I mean, Lost Boys is in the top five for sure. You've got, you know, Sisters of Mercy singing, Thou Shall Not Kill.
No, I know what we're talking about.
All the Lost Boys stuff is great. I love it.
This is really fun, man. You know, because it's like we're kind of putting different medias into the multimedia, man. We tend to kind of gravitate heavy on movies and TV, but you know, hearing your nutty ass music theories is kind of fun. We got to touch base on this again sometime.
We need to. So yeah, if you look these up, I think you'll really like these suggestions, and you might even buy the albums, and we will all talk and listen to it, and I might even make you a mixtape.
That might be the price. So somebody can have a wonderful mixtape made by Brian, sent to you just in time for next Christmas. We'll make an awesome mix, volume one, that Brian can send out. That'll be the giveaway next holiday season.
True. All right, so on to our next subject of discussion. So Wade and I, as you know, met in the year 2000, and we fell in love over...
Just stop right there. We met in 2000 and we fell in love. There it is.
End of story. We've been together for over 40 years now. We fell in love over our love of film, but more particularly very...
So, you know, you're sticking with that. We did fall in love. The commonality was through the love of film, is what you're saying.
Yes. Film okay. Very, very bad movies. Because we always watch terrible, bad movies that we love because they're so bad, they're good. And we've talked on this podcast about... Birdemic, we've talked about King Kung Fu, and you might even see Wade's work on boomstickcomics.com, writing reviews and getting you to seek out, step outside your bubble and check these movies out.
But yeah, Diamonds in the Rough.
Diamonds in the Rough, that is what it's called. And we're gonna bring you a movie today that you might not have heard of, you might have heard of. It is called Troll 2, and it's... Oh my God, this movie was made in 1990, and it's not even a sequel. We'll get into why they call it Troll 2, but it is not a sequel. And the movie is so bad that somebody actually made a documentary about how bad it is.
What's the name of that documentary, by the way?
Best Worst Movie. It's so funny. But yeah, 1990, this guy named Drake Floyd decided to make a movie and call it Troll 2. Wade, I mean, it doesn't even have trolls in it.
No, there's no trolls in Troll 2.
No, there's not. And there's not even, this is not even a sequel to the first, because there is a first troll movie, but they're not related.
Yeah, and so basically, the name of the movie is Troll 2, and this isn't a sequel, and there's no trolls in it, so...
That's right off the bat. So the movie was actually titled Goblins, but the film company didn't think it would succeed. So they renamed it Troll 2 in an attempt to market it as a sequel to Troll.
But we gotta ride on all that troll heat.
Yes. Yeah, because the first Troll, maybe, I'll look it up. The first Troll movie came out in 1986, and it made $5 million. So
yeah, it's like Troll or Goblins, I'm not buying it. No way, no how. But you know what's been going really well is that Troll movie.
Yes.
Let's capture some of that later. Energy.
So yeah, it's pretty funny. So what was the last time you saw this film?
Oh, man, it's been a little while now. I'd say probably a couple years, 2-3 years. You know, I remember one of the premises of the movie that I found just the whole thing is, it's like the dad of the family wants to do like a home exchange with somebody out in the farming community or something. Like, just like the whole premise in and of itself is ridiculous. That like, hey, it's kind of like we're gonna do like a house swap with a family so that they can live in the city and we can live in the country.
That is exactly what the story is.
And why in the hell, there's some financial issues going on, right?
The goblins or trolls like dressing like humans' clothes, basically.
Yeah, it's like an Edgar suit. It's like Edgar, it's like an alien in an Edgar suit.
Yes.
So they go out to the. They trade houses, and so they go out into the. He wants to experience the farming life, so they go out to this farmhouse, and it just so happens to be in the city of Nilbog.
Now, I want you to write down, if you're listening, write this down, Nilbog.
Here, I'll write it down too. I'm writing it down as we're talking.
Yes, the town of Nilbog, Nilbog. This is how clever the filmmakers are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nilbog. I wrote it down. Now what?
Now you know why they lived in a town called Nilbog.
Oh, should I? What if I held it up to a mirror or something?
Oh, my God. What did you find?
Shit. Nilbog is goblin backwards. It was in front of us the whole goddamn time.
Oh, my God. My mind is blown.
Holy shit, we're in Goblin Town. and these goblins like to eat people, you know, and but they had to have the family eat this thing first, and it turns them in, they want to turn you into a plant, and what the
Yeah, no, this is all true.
There's a witch involved at some point, and throw out some thoughts here. I'm already flabbergasted.
So remember how to defeat the goblins, the trolls? One of the main characters, who's Josh, I think his name was Josh. He eats like a giant fucking bologna sandwich, and it makes his body poisonous.
Yes. Well, because aren't the trolls like vegetarians or something?
Yes. Yes.
So they eat people, but they have to turn people into a plant in order to eat them. So they want you to eat. They want the people to eat some goo to turn them into a plant, so that then the vegetarian trolls can eat them. I don't know why they just don't eat plants.
We wouldn't have a scary movie then. It's just trolls were eating plants and pruning all their flowers.
That's the movie that needs to be written right there, where you have vegetarian, earth-loving monsters that are, you know, just doesn't make any sense.
They're good people. You know who could play these guys? The Rock and Kevin Hart.
Perfect. Perfect.
Perfect. But
I think that I think that they're in like 6 or 7 upcoming movies, right? I mean, isn't that the Hollywood go-to couple right now?
That is the Hollywood go-to couple. But yeah, this movie, I mean, production values are terrible. Like, yes, they're on location, but the camera movement is so wonky. And a lot of times it's from the point of view of a troll or goblin. So it's very shaky and like very low.
Yeah, you got a shaky cam. It's like they got a little person to just run through the woods with a yes. camera, handy cam or something.
Yes. And like a lot of, like, there's a lot of editing issues. The acting is like, I become speechless on the acting. It's just, it's so bad.
The dad in this, Josh's dad in this, is just so over the top. I just love it so much. At one point when, because I don't know how much I don't want to give, like, I can't say spoilers because it's like there is no spoiler for that. But at one point, everybody's a dick to Josh. Nobody likes Josh, and there's probably pretty good reason. He is kind of an asshole. But at one point, he's trying to get his family to stop eating the meal, and they won't. And so, you know, what else would you – I mean, here, let me ask you, Brian. If, like, you know that if your family eats the meal in front of them, that they're going to be – you know, turned through a magic goo into plants so that trolls/goblins can eat them. You know that you have to stop your family from eating that. What would you do? Because would you say, oh, family, please stop? And then they say, no, Brian, leave us alone. But I mean, what would you do after that?
Turn over the table or throw all the plates against the wall?
That sounds like a pretty reasonable approach. Did Josh do that?
No, he didn't.
No, what Josh did was proceed to urinate on everybody's meal while he's sitting at the table. He just whips it out and starts pissing on everybody's food.
It's like he was really pissing on us for watching it.
As the viewer, you are that meal.
Yes. Yes, you are.
It's just extreme nonsense like that. And then the dad's speech afterwards where he has to talk about tightening his belt so he doesn't feel the hunger pangs and all that. No, oh my God.
It's hilarious. So, Scream Factory, we love Scream Factory. It's a home video company. They released Troll 2, November of 2015. And, like, I think 5,000 copies came with, the documentary Best Worst Movie, which was, mm-hmm, the documentary on the worst movie ever made, basically.
It's actually a good documentary, too. It's worth a watch. I enjoyed it. You know, I mean, especially if you're watching some of these recommendations and you end up getting more interest in this. This one's a good one to watch because it really is talking about a train wreck.
No, it is. And, like, I think, like, it made – the documentary made national news and, like, talked about, you know – because I think the person who made the documentary was the child star of Troll 2.
Yeah, so they have a lot of the actors from the movie are actually in the documentary, too. It's good.
Yeah, it's great. So definitely highly recommend seeking out Troll 2 because you're just not going to ever see anything like it.
No, there's not. Yeah, this one really is a standout as far as the bad movies go. And if you're at Boomstick Comics and stuff, I'm sure there'll be a link up to where you can go and check this all out on Amazon and pick up your own copy, right?
Right.
Awesome.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
So definitely go watch this one. This one is a good one to sit around with folks and just be like, what in the hell happened here?
What happened? What happened?
What happened?
What happened? All right. So moving on to our last segment, which we promoted on our last podcast, where we were going to take a recent TV show, a new TV show, and recast it with 80s and 90s characters from our favorite shows. So it's going to be fun. So
we're calling it a precast.
A precast. We're flipping it on its ear, and we're going to do a precast for the new show that everybody loves. It's so good, Stranger Things. I can hear the music in my head right now. It's so good. So we're going to cast the two main adults, which were Joyce Byers and Jim Hopper, and then we're going to recast, of course, the kids and Eleven. So
yeah,
that's the plan.
And first, so Stranger Things is pretty great. It's kind of a throwback to an 80s feel in general. So I think that this is a fun kind of precasting. because it's kind of taking it to that level. And for as hell, this conversation is enough to know that Brian already says ridiculous things that are unfounded and he can't back them up. So I love having casting discussions with him because we'll usually hear something that'll be really nutty, and I'm gonna have to call him out on his lunacy. I don't know if it's gonna happen early or late, but I guess we're about to find out.
And so, like, so since we're recasting this with like '90s characters, I mean, all the characters they're not how they are today, grown up. They are back then as kids.
Yeah, it's almost like we're placing it back in the late '80s,
right?
And so that's kind of how we're doing it. It's like we're placing the show actually in the time that the time period is kind of trying to represent.
Right. So let's start with Joyce Byers, who was played by Winona Ryder.
Yes.
In Stranger Things. So I definitely have one. I'm curious to see how many we're going to agree on.
We're not going to agree on much. I can feel it already. But with Joyce, what I like to think of is Joyce is spiraling as the show goes on, right? So, I mean, she kind of starts out kind of as a kind of what you would say a typical mom, but going through a little bit of a hard time, but kind of making it happen still. And then it just kind of, every episode kind of spirals worse and worse and is getting nuttier and nuttier, right? So when I was trying to think about how to cast this, I was trying to picture somebody that I think could really do a good job with that.
Okay.
And so who, you want me to just go ahead and, should I go first on
this?
Yeah,
go for it.
Okay, so for this one, I picked from a little television show called Roseanne. I picked Laurie Metcalf. You know, I had
the same exact pick.
What?
Roseanne's sister?
Yeah, Aunt Jackie.
Yes, Aunt Jackie. Same exact pick.
Wow. Well, there we go. Oh my God, we're in sync, everybody. I guess that's how we fell in love.
I tell you.
So what was your thinking? Why did you pick her? Is it a similar thing?
Yeah, similar thing. I was like, okay, who can be like a disheveled mom who's always like nutso, not like forgetting her keys or something like that? And I thought they could play the part fairly well, Dana Scully. But then I was like, nope, it is Jackie.
She is a really good actress. I think that, you know, it's kind of like we had that conversation about John Goodman, you know, previously. It's like Laurie Metcalf is a really I think she could pull off going off the rails quite well. You know, I think it would be pretty awesome to see.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. But I mean, that's a really, you know what, Brian, you may be redeeming yourself, sir. Maybe we're going to be 100% in line.
That's awesome.
We're batting 1,000 right now. I say we just see where we go next. Who's next on your list? You got Hopper, Jim Hopper?
Jim Hopper, played by Dave Harbour. He's the cop in Stranger Things.
Yeah, and one of the only adults that's sympathetic to the kids.
Correct.
You know, and so who'd you pick for, or what qualities did you think of when you thought of Hopper?
Kind of a guy who just, he's down on his luck, but he does his job. He's a good man. And he's down on his luck. He's depressed.
Yeah. I mean, he's going through some stuff, right? I mean, but he's like the only one that actually listens to the kids in the thing and kind of says, okay, let me hear you guys out, as opposed to, but he's got his own demons and his own past. He's trying to kind of work through, and he's had some tough years recently, and it kind of, he has that face that's kind of worn on him a little bit.
Right.
Who'd you pick for that?
Balky from Perfect Strangers.
Bronson Pinchot. Bronson Pinchot was your pick for that?
No, that was my funny pick. No, I actually went a little older. I went with, like, he's almost retired. I picked Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World.
Oh.
Because I think he could be a depressed guy, but he also has, like, a thing, like a special bond with kids that he could listen to him and, like, believe him.
That's something. Yeah, I went I went a completely different direction here. We're going to have to talk about Bronson Pinchot another day, because I actually have heard some stories about how amazing an actor he actually is, and him going on that show actually kind of, Perfect Strangers kind of hurt his career more than helped it. And I found that to be a fascinating, because everybody was talking about how great he was. Like, really good actors were complimenting him a lot and were saying that, like, he's could be the next shooting star. Anyway, we'll talk about that another day. But my pick for this one is TV's Patrick Duffy.
Step by Step. All right. You know? I like that. Yeah,
he's one of those guys where I think he kind of can play a helpful ear to the kids, but could probably, you know, wear some damage on the ears and stuff. I thought he would be a pretty good pick for that.
That is a good one. I like Mr. Feeney, and I do like Step by Step Dad Patrick.
Well, it's definitely not a contest, but I'm winning now.
I don't know. Let's go with Jonathan Byers, who is played by Charlie Heaton now. Jonathan Byers is the kid who goes to the Upside Down. He's the kid that who goes missing in episode one.
You know, what an interesting sort of thing, because it's like his character isn't even really that fleshed out in the show, you know? I mean, so it was one of those where I didn't really know exactly where to go with it. I was kind of thinking, if you can time out the aging right, I was thinking Neil Patrick Harris from Doogie Howser.
Oh, all right. I like that. I went with Paul Pfeiffer from The Wonder Years.
Oh, that's a good one.
Paul Pfeiffer, because he's kind of a nerdy guy. You know, he's a smaller kid, and I think...
Paul could have been all the kids.
That's true. Paul could have played every kid. Pfeiffer!
Yeah. In fact, they would rename all the kids Paul Pfeiffer, too. I would. Just leave it at that. Yeah.
I like Doogie. It would have been
well. No, I like both. I like your pick as well. That was a good one. I don't know who won that one. That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. All right. Let's move on to Lucas Sinclair, who was played by Caleb McLaughlin. He is our black star here in the movie or the show.
Well, okay, that's one way to describe him. I mean, just the most upfront and blunt with it.
Lucas Sinclair is the one. Yeah, he's like he does not want to like believe or like he's always pessimistic and always like, okay, this is gonna be terrible.
I don't know if I would describe Lucas that way, because Lucas, to me, of the group, is the strong one. He's the one that, you know, is kind of the. He's kind of the counterbalance the other way. It's like, guys, are you losing your damn minds? What are you talking about? You know, I mean, it's like one of those where I think he's kind of holding these guys in a level of reality before they get too far down the rabbit hole with their Dungeons and Dragons horseshit. You know, and to me, I think it's the most fascinating thing is that Lucas is friends with these kids to begin with, because Lucas seems like he could easily be running with another crowd. And so I find it very interesting that he's kind of the most level-headed kind of thing of all the kids and kind of the, hey, what are you guys doing sort of check on them. But at the same time, I think it's his love of the games and the silliness and it's like a real friendship there that kind of keeps them all together. I think Lucas is a great character.
I do. I like him a lot too. So I went with Brandon Quinton Adams.
Who's Brandon Quinton Adams?
You would remember him from, he was like the very young Michael in Moonwalker, and he was also in that horror movie, The People Under the Stairs.
Okay.
And then he grew up and he was in The Sandlot. He was the pitcher. Give him the
humor. Oh, yeah. Wasn't he in like that, the 4400 show too or something?
Oh, yeah,
like that?
He might have, but this was like in that Moonwalker from the 80s, he was very young and very, you know, he was a kid. Just like he was People Under the Stairs. He was very young. And Brandon Quinton Adams would play a very good role here.
Okay. So, I guess we're just throwing the whole 90s sitcom thing at the door then, right?
Yes.
I guess so. Okay. Well, I went ahead and stayed on pass, though. That's a good pick. I actually like – I think that he would add some gravity to it. But I was thinking of Kel from Keenan and Kel.
I actually
thought that, you know, he's one of those guys where he usually would always play, like, silly characters and that sort of thing. But there's been a few times where he's actually played a more grounded sort of real thing. And I thought that that would actually been a really good thing for – I think he could have pulled it off.
Welcome to Good Burger.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, usually funny people, you know, it's like the sad clown theory where funny people actually do drama quite well, you yeah. know. And I think that he would actually – I think he could probably do a pretty darn good job with it.
That would be pretty awesome.
I don't know who won that one. Yeah, I'm going to call that a draw. We'll see how that goes. I'll want to reserve my thoughts on it. But so far, I feel like I'm winning.
No.
All right, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
All right, so
who's next on the list?
Mike Wheeler, played by Finn Wolfhard. He is the one.
Can we first of all say the actor's name is what?
Finn Wolfhard.
Finn Wolfhard is one of the craziest damn names. Hello, everyone. My name's Finn Wolfhard.
That's like, a pretty manly name, don't you think?
Huh?
It's a pretty manly name.
It sounds like something that a kid would make up to, like, want to, you know, what a... Yeah, it's pretty badass.
He's from Canada, so we...
Well, I'm not going to hold that against him. You know, nobody's perfect.
Nobody's
right?
perfect, no.
Hey, I love you, Canada. I'm sorry. I'm giving you a hard time right there. I love our Canadian friends up north. So anybody yelling at the screen right now, what's that about? Just you know, relax.
We'll give you something to cry about.
I love you guys.
We love you. So, yeah, Mike Wheeler, he's the kid who's... a lot of the show takes place at his house. He's the one that takes an 11.
Yeah, I was just saying, I kind of consider him the lead of the entire series, essentially.
Yes. So you got to feel somebody who kind of like has a quality of almost kind of like a genuine quality, but questions. He's always worried. But he takes that first step into trying something new. And I, of course, went with Kevin Arnold.
Yeah, okay. I thought about Kevin Arnold for this. Tell me what kind of – is it just that you thought it was because he was very empathetic, like the people love him and it's easy to kind of get attached to him?
That, and I think Kevin, like if Kevin Arnold actually found 11, I think he would take it in. I think he would take 11 in and try to do the right thing. And, you know, like – and like Mike Wheeler's character, he doesn't always do the right thing, just like Kevin Arnold. So I just thought there was a lot of similarities there.
It's a good pick, man. Like I said, I thought about it for a while, too. Ultimately, I kind of went a different direction. And the main reason I did was because I view Mike Wheeler as kind of an outsider, you know, where it's like he's not – he doesn't have tons of friends. He's not, like, the most popular kid and all that stuff. And I think that there's just something – too cute about Fred Savage for that character in the end. And so that's why I kind of went a different direction. And I actually went back to the well with Roseanne and said, Michael Fisher, DJ Tanner.
I have DJ for another pick.
Well, spoiler alert, everybody.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, no, I actually picked him for the Mike Wheeler part. I thought that he would have been really great for that because he has kind of an outsider element to him, but he's still kind of there's a certain level of endearing nature with him. But he's kind of the weird kid a little bit, right? I mean, I think Mike Wheeler's kind of the weird kid, but not a weirdo. He's just kind of unusual. You know, he's got his thing. He does his Dungeons and Dragons and he's got his friends and that's about it.
I like it. I like that. But moving on from DJ, that same actor, I picked him for everybody's favorite, Dustin. Dustin Henderson, played by Gaten Matarazzo.
Yeah, Gaten Matarazzo. Yeah, it's... He's the kid with that has kind of an unusual speech, you know.
Yeah, he has the two teeth missing, and he's one of my favorite characters ever. But yeah, I picked DJ. I think DJ would kill that role.
And so you have a DJ, Michael Fisher, playing that role.
Yes.
What was your thinking there? Why'd you put him there? Why did I screw up at putting him in the Michael slot?
Because I could see DJ just, like, trying to, like, be the fun, loving guy who curses sometimes, who's really up for kind of like an adventure, or always challenging, like, we'll race you home and yeah. You know, something like that. I definitely thought DJ was that character.
It makes sense, especially if you have how you have it cast right now. If you have Fred Savage as Mike, then I think that he would be a really good Dustin to a Fred Savage Mike, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I was thinking. If I had Mike played by Michael Fisher, you know, the thing about Dustin is he's even a weirder kid, right? But he's really cool and fun, but he's just kind of – he's even more of an oddball – he's the oddball of the oddball crew, right?
Right.
And so to me, I had to kind of go even further. And so I just went full out Screech from Saved by the Bell. It just said, let's get that nut in there.
Oh, my God. Screech.
So, yeah, we're screeching it up.
Screeching it. Young Screech.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That changes everything.
Before he lost his mind and became an adult and kind of a nut,
yes.
You know. So, but if you watch like the first season or two of Saved by the Bell, when they're pretty darn young, he's kind of a sweet little weirdo kid. And I thought that would have been a really interesting kind of.
Yeah, he would have to tone it down to play that part because.
Yes.
Yes.
He'd have to kind of ground it in reality.
Yes.
You know, it's like Jesse Spano getting her. Pill. We'll do a Saved by the Bell discussion another day, but that whole thing. What was Zach's band? Here, we'll talk about it. Here, let's save it all for the Saved by the Bell yes. episode.
All right. So who won that one? Is it DJ or is it Screech?
I don't know. You know, I'm starting to kind of.
You're thinking my picks are good.
I'm not. They're not terrible.
It's not all Kevin Hart.
No, and I'm actually. Shocked right now. I still feel like we have one chance for you to really shit the bed here. So I'm excited to see where you go with 11.
Okay, so bringing it to 11, everybody's favorite girl. 11 played by the adorable, the amazing, talented Millie Bobby Brown. So I don't remember her being in a TV show. She was in a few movies as a young kid, but
so again, you're going off of the task at hand.
I am.
Okay.
I went with Tina Majorino.
Who is Tina Majorino?
All right. So you probably remember her as Deb in Napoleon Dynamite. But you –
With the side ponytail?
Well, not from that movie, no. She was in tons of movies as a very young girl, such as Karina – Andre in Waterworld.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know what to say here. What a weird pick.
And I also thought of Anna Chlumsky from My Girl.
So you didn't want to go with any sitcoms?
I mean, just for that one.
Just for that one, he says.
I mean, technically, Tina Majorino was in Camp Wilder.
So what made you think of 11? What qualities do you think of that you think Tina Majorino would be a good fit
because
for?
Because Tina Majorino was in like some serious drama shit. And
no. But what are the qualities of 11?
I think that she has been through the ringer. Like she is fucked up and
yeah.
sad. And I think Anna or Tina Majorino. I'm going with Tina Majorino. Can totally play that. Like her in Waterworld specifically, like just there's like a childlike wonderment about like being in the real world and learning these things and being with people, but then also like a scared, shitless little kid.
And a badass.
Yes, and a badass.
And so I kind of thought about all those qualities. And I went to what was at one point a Canadian show, and then it came over to the U.S. and became kind of a thing on Nickelodeon. It was a little show called You Can't Do That on Television.
Oh.
And I'm going with Miss Alanis Morissette.
Oh, my God. A very young Alanis Morissette.
Yes. Yes. And I think she would have done that role some... I think she would have been awesome in that role.
Wow. All right. I'm trying to think of, like, movies or stuff she's been in, maybe minus Dogma, but oh, my goodness.
I don't think you need to do a whole... I think she could just pull it off. She was awesome, and you can't do... She was only in a, you know, for a couple, you know, episodes. Like a season or two.
Yeah.
On. But no, she's great. And she, I think she already is kind of a little weird outsider kid, but has, you know, I think she could have pulled that off. I think she would have been pretty awesome at it. I also considered Jodie Sweetin for a while because, like, you could tell with all the drug use later on, she went nuts, but...
Yeah, no, I thought of the girls from Full House, but I didn't pick them. I went with Tana Majorino.
Yeah, you went with something that's not in the realm of
things. She was in Camp Wilder. She was in more episodes of Camp Wilder than Alanis Morissette was on You Can't Do That on Television.
I don't even know what Camp Wilder is. So.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. But that being said, clearly, I think we know who the winner is.
Brian Kluger.
Oh, no. we're going to have to put up a poll on this one and let the people decide.
Yeah, so we're going to post this on boomstickcomics.com. It'll also be ready for you to hear on iTunes. Subscribe to it, Multimedia Men. But we want to hear your casting decisions. Who would you cast from the 80s or 90s TV shows? Like, we want to hear your picks, too, because perhaps we miss somebody. Like, maybe Urkel had to play Caleb, you know, or Lucas.
Or maybe he had to play Mike. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea. But, yeah.
This has been a really fun episode,
This
man.
Has been a great episode. This has been a very, very fun episode. We will be back. We will try to do an episode before the new year.
Yes.
With more of these recasts or precasts, as you call it.
Something. You know, or maybe we'll do some casting. If you guys have some ideas of stuff that you want to hear us argue about, let us know that too. But, I mean, you know, we can definitely kind of throw out some ideas and that. I think that we're going to have to do a holiday episode just to kind of talk about Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Christmas and all that good stuff.
Right. Yes, we will do that.
There's plenty of holiday movies and music and books and whatever that need to be discussed.
Right. So, yeah, it'll be good. It'll be – we will come back for a holiday episode, and then the new year will be here, and we'll have tons of 2017 things to talk about. But
we will be officially in the future, man. We're going to be in 2017. How crazy is that, everybody?
It's so good.
Are we calling it the – nobody's calling it the teens.
Is it the teens? We're the teens? I would.
I'd call it the teens. We're about to get into the – we need to bring back the Roaring 20s.
We got to bring back the pinstripe zoot suits, man.
Well, I just mean when we get to the 20s, we need to all start coming together and calling it the 20s for Pete's sakes.
The Roaring 20s. Yes, I agree.
It's the 20s, man. Let's get with it, everybody.
2020s. No, just the 20s. The Roaring 20s, and you have to roar like a lion.
All right. Why do you got to take something cool and turn it into ridiculous?
That's me.
Well, and that's us. That's been the show, right?
Yeah, that's the show. Multimedia Men. We will be back next week. Thanks for listening, and thank you to Wade up in Wichita.
Thank you, man. You're the best. You're the best. Go online and rate us, everybody. Go to Boomstick Comics and check out some stuff. Go to all the other things where Brian's really making it happen. He is the awesome source on the internet to find about all things cool, and he's doing so many awesome other projects. So definitely stay with that guy and kind of keep up on everything.
Why, thank you, sir. That's a good thing. You just I love. Hey, friend, buddy. That's me getting excited.
Let's land this plane. All right, let's get out of here.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, take it easy, everybody. Bye.